A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corn. So I began using GitHub a number of years ago, and mostly actually using it for maybe what wasn't the apparent use, or maybe why most people put stuff up on GitHub. I think a lot of people use it for kind of portfolios if they're developers or looking for jobs in development. And my initial use for documenting tech projects, if I really trace it back, I think was recording how I set up a SMS relay service on a phone. And there's a lot of things that are challenging, and you forget in a few days, how on earth did I get that working, especially in a few months if it breaks. And that's part of why I've become a big advocate for documentation, is it's actually self-reference material. So a lot of the first repositories I created were little attempts to get pretty inconsequential things working, like a script to toggle, you know, put on a movie on our smart TV and turn it off after a certain number of hours. This was in the pre-AI era, where doing this stuff actually required that caveman skill of opening up a code editor and actually writing a bash script. But it worked, and it was nice to have it there. Doesn't cost anything. I guess I figured if someone else is trying to figure out how to do this, and they find my script and it works, brilliant. And really no more expectations to the activity than that. The reason that I've done a lot more with GitHub in the past year is actually I found it increasingly to be a kind of hacky way of sorts to gather context, which I can feed to an AI agent. And I'll give you an example to make this concrete. If I find, if I'm looking for a few repositories for a specific project or task, for example, browser automation. And right now I'm working on agent skills. And part of the first serious agent skills I've created is finding out, well, how am I gonna actually get this to work? And, you know, the usual suspects, Puppeteer, Selenium, and then all the more new tooling. So a process I love, I would do this all day if I didn't have other things to do, is going through GitHub, searching for some terms, and I hate to use the word curating because it sounds so, it's become a bit of a buzzword, I feel, but curating essentially 10 that really strike my interest in which I feel, hey, these are actually going to be very useful or potentially very useful. Now, I'll bucket those into a resource list. Think about the awesome lists that have been around for a long time, and it's basically that. And I'll use Claude to basically do the hard work, the grunt work, if you will, of saying, okay, these are 10 repositories. I've looked at them. They're good. Sometimes I'll jot down some notes, and I'm literally writing stuff on a notepad. It's called Kate for those who use KDE Linux, the most basic tool imaginable. You've literally got a white box to put in text. I'll jot down a few notes telling Claude, this is why I think this could be useful. And then I've used a template structure to say, package it up into a repository. So if anyone's wondering how I create a decent number of these, I would say lately at a greater pace, it's actually because I've defined an agent skill that basically runs through this whole process for me defining why I'm creating this list, to gathering the repositories, to Claude organizing them, running a script that pulls in the dynamic badges, the whole shebang. And I feel like that's great use of Claude if I can be self-promotional about it. But the reason that this is a useful thing to do is, firstly, it's a reference. I frequently find myself looking back at these whenever, you know, I mightn't be working on this tool today, and then in a few days I want to say, wait, I already did the scouting and such. Here's what I found. Now, the second effect that has become very useful in AI is that because if I put it up on GitHub and it's public, it's a public repository, I can point Claude to that URL and say, here's what I found the other day. This is what I've, you know, would any of these work for what we're working on now? So in other words, I'm open sourcing these lists for my own reference, like I was doing in my initial projects, for anyone else who might find them useful. And the third and increasingly very worthwhile reason I'm finding for doing this is because it provides me with a easy mechanism to seed context into an AI, because Claude just fetches from GitHub and it ingests that context in a couple of seconds. This actually also works a treat, and this is maybe my tip in the prompt, for data. If you have some structured data, you want to throw it together as a JSON file or as a CSV or whatever you want, and get the raw link on GitHub, the agent can read that perfectly. Now, here's my question. Increasingly, I find myself wondering, who am I creating this repository for? And the honest answer is it a human? Is it an agent? And frequently the answer is, it's very blurry. And that's kind of becoming a moot question, because it's probably other humans using AI agents. And I want the agents to have an easy time getting access to this. Now, we've seen in web development the emergence of some early standards for creating the stuff for agents. LLMs.txt. Now people are putting agent skills on their website, so the agent will actually find the markdown skill. And you write things like, this is our contact page. And you never quite know. I don't think anyone actually knows how to write these, including me. You're kind of writing, oh, hey, AI agent person, and assuming that that's going to work. And it does seem to. So it's a very hacky kind of process at the moment. But the question is, Herman and Korn, I think this is more than a much broader question than just, how can I put up GitHub repositories so that an AI agent can spider them and know the lay of the land? Do I put in agents.md there saying, if you are an agent finding yourself here, this is what this is about? Because there's an argument, and I think it's a very fair one increasingly, that that's actually unnecessary. I can point Claude to a GitHub repository. It can read the README that was written for humans, and it doesn't need that little agent hand-holding thing to actually know what it is. I think it's actually more important in terms of how you prepare the information. And that's where I have a specific question. Because we get down to things like, if I have structured data and I'm putting it on GitHub because I want an agent to have access to it, do I want to use JSON? Do I want to use CSV if it's really big? Do I want to use Parquet? If I am providing a visual reference for an agent, do I want to use a certain resolution? And if I'm just structuring information, like markdown, is there a specific formula I want to be using? And again, a lot of this is predicated on an open question I have, and I think a lot of people do, that the answers kind of depend upon, are we going to create parallel everything? Parallel readmes, parallel robots.txt for agents and for humans. And I will tell you my bet is strongly that no. Technology trends towards convergence. And increasingly, I think we're going to see just robots.txt or whatever comes after it. Everything will there'll be the assumption that this stuff is being done for agents. Like we're seeing with browser, web MCP by Google, we're baking MCP into the websites. We're not. The idea that we were optimizing things for AI is going to seem ridiculous in 5 years, because everything will be optimized for AI agents. So that's my take on it. But I'd love to get your thoughts on how to actually use this tactic to good effect. And GitHub is just an example. It could be putting up a data set on Hugging Face. It could be putting up a note on even a paste bin, right? It doesn't really matter. The only variable here is, can the agent crawl it easily? And that's actually worth talking about, because there's a bit of opaqueness in what Claude can fetch. I've done some a little bit of homework on this, and Claude mentioned once, I'm trying to connect from Frankfurt, and I said, oh, that's a useful bit of information. So I imagine that the compute running Claude code and Claude AI is globally distributed, and you know, the main cloud computing centers like Frankfurt, London, New York, whatever, there's a good chance that's where the agent's actually running its fetch from. And when you have geo-restrictions, of course, if it's geo-restricted to your country, the agent can't get it. So I think there's a strong reason to put information in a place that is as easy for the agent as possible and will pose the minimum chance of geo-restrictions, including, and this would be another aspect for us to talk about, Chinese-based agents that can be assumed to be behind the Great Firewall, and any ways in which we can streamline that to give, because I think there's a big win here, not just in providing information. This is an effective way to seed context. It's also, I think, a very effective inbound marketing strategy. I've been arguing for years and still trying to work on this for my own websites, that agent optimization, making your website as easy to digest and parse for an AI agent, is the next frontier, or the current frontier more probably, in inbound marketing, now that SEO seems like a very legacy way of finding people. Over to you, Herman and Corn.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's one of those questions where the surface is practical, but underneath there's something bigger shifting. He's been using GitHub in this interesting way, not just as a portfolio or a place to stash code, but as a kind of context depot. He curates lists of repositories, packages them up, makes them public, and then points Claude at the URL. The agent fetches it in seconds, ingests the whole thing, and suddenly he's got a rich context seed for whatever he's working on. But the question that's been nagging at him is, who am I actually creating this for? And the answer keeps coming back blurry.
This is genuinely one of the more interesting practical questions I've seen in a while, because it sits right at the collision point between how we've always published information and how agents consume it. And Daniel's instinct is right. The answer is increasingly both, and that's uncomfortable for a lot of the assumptions we've built into how we structure things.
By the way, today's episode is being written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, so if anything sounds unusually coherent, that's why.
I'll take that as a compliment to our usual incoherence.
So let's start with the concrete tactic Daniel's describing, because it's clever. He's essentially using public GitHub repositories as a personal external memory that happens to be agent accessible. He does the scouting work once, packages it up with some structure, and then any agent he's working with can pull it in. That's not just convenience. That's a workflow pattern that changes how you think about note-taking and research.
Right. And what's interesting is that this inverts the usual relationship people have with open source. Most people put things on GitHub thinking about other humans finding and using their code. Daniel's primary audience is actually his future self, plus whatever agent he's working with. The fact that other humans might find it useful is almost a pleasant side effect. And I think that's more common than people admit. A lot of documentation is written for the author's future self first.
The self-reference material point he made. You forget in 3 days how you got something working, and in 3 months you're completely lost if it breaks.
And now add the agent layer. It's not just that you can reread your own notes. You can hand those notes to an agent and say, here's the research I already did, build on this. That's a qualitatively different thing. You're not just remembering, you're extending your own past effort through a tool that can actually act on it.
Let's get into the format question, because Daniel raised a really specific set of trade-offs. If you're putting structured data on GitHub for agent consumption, do you use JSON, CSV, Parquet? And his instinct that the answer depends on what you're optimizing for is exactly right.
I've been digging into this, and the emerging consensus is actually pretty clear, even if it's not widely known yet. For data that an agent is going to ingest, JSON, or NDJSON, that's New Line Delimited JSON, is the sweet spot. It handles nested structures naturally, it's universally parsable, and agents understand it natively because most of their training data includes massive amounts of JSON. CSV works for simple flat data under about a gigabyte, but the moment you have any nesting or relationships, it gets awkward fast. Parquet is fascinating because it's columnar, which means queries are incredibly efficient and the compression is excellent, but it's really a storage and analytics format, not an ingestion format. The pattern that's emerging is what some of the data infrastructure people are calling ingest as JSON, store as Parquet. You keep your data in Parquet for your own analytical work, but when you want an agent to consume it, you serve it as JSON.
For Daniel's use case, putting structured data on GitHub so Claude or another agent can pull it in. JSON is basically the answer.
There's one nuance, though, and this came out of some work ClickHouse published just last month. If you're dealing with streaming data or very large datasets where you don't want the agent to have to load everything into context at once, ND.json becomes really important. Each line is a complete, valid JSON object, so the agent can process it line by line rather than parsing one massive file.
That's the kind of detail that sounds niche until you actually hit the problem, and then you're very glad someone thought about it. But Daniel's question goes beyond format. He's asking about something more structural. This idea of whether we're going to end up with parallel everything. Separate README files for agents. Separate robots.txt equivalents. Separate standards for how information gets presented depending on who or what is consuming it.
This is where the landscape gets messy. Let me lay out what's actually happening right now, because there are at least four competing approaches and none of them have clearly won. The one that got the most attention is lms.txt, which Jeremy Howard from Answer.a I proposed back in September 2024. The idea is simple. You put a markdown file at the root of your website that gives agents a curated summary of what's important. Over 844,000 websites had adopted it as of last October, including Anthropic, Cloudflare, Stripe, Supabase.
That sounds like traction.
It sounds like it. And then you dig one layer deeper and Google's John Mueller said flat out that no AI system currently uses lms.notgoogles, not anyone else's that he's aware of. So you've got this weird situation where hundreds of thousands of websites are putting these files up, and it's not clear any major AI platform is actually reading them.
That's almost a perfect illustration of the hype cycle for agent-oriented standards. Everyone rushes to adopt the thing because they don't want to be left behind, but the platforms haven't committed to consuming it.
That's not even the only standard in play. There's Agentic Web DOP&D, which came out in February this year, and it's much more ambitious. It's not just a content summary. It describes API endpoints, interactive capabilities, authentication mechanisms, multi-step workflows. It's positioning itself as a superset of robots.xml and lms.txt all rolled into one. The pitch is agent first rather than crawler. First, web design.
One standard that nobody's officially consuming, and another standard that's trying to eat the whole stack. This is not a landscape that screams convergence.
There's a third one that's specific to GitHub. GitHub did their own research on this, analyzing over 2,500 repositories that had agents.md files, same idea, different file name, and they found something really practical. The most effective agents.md files define specialist personas rather than vague helpers. So instead of saying here is a helpful assistant, they say things like @testAgent for React components. They include explicit boundaries, never commit secrets, never modify the build configuration without asking. And the key insight was that agents often read only the first few hundred lines or bytes, so critical information has to be front-loaded.
That front-loading point is actually huge, and I don't think enough people are thinking about it. If you're writing documentation or context that you expect an agent to consume, the assumption that it reads everything top to bottom like a human would is wrong. It might be doing a partial fetch. It might be summarizing. It might be extracting only what seems relevant.
That connects directly to the trust problem with all of these standards. TXT or Agentic Web DOP&D lets website owners present different content to agents than what humans see. What's stopping someone from gaming that? There's research showing that carefully crafted prompts in these files can make language models 2.5 times more likely to recommend targeted content. That's adversarial SEO for language models, and it's trivially easy to do.
You've got a format that's designed to be helpful, and it's immediately also a vector for manipulation. That tension is going to shape whether these standards actually get adopted by the platforms.
Why would Claude or ChatGPT or Gemini trust a file that the website owner wrote specifically to influence what the agent says about them? The whole point of the agent crawling the actual site is that it's seeing what humans see. The moment you create a parallel channel, you've introduced a trust problem that doesn't have an obvious solution.
Which brings me to Daniel's bet, and I think he's right about this. His argument is that technology trends toward convergence, And in 5 years, the idea that we're optimizing things separately for AI agents will seem ridiculous because everything will be optimized for AI agents by default. The parallel file approach is a transitional phase.
I'm about 70% convinced by that. The reason I'm not fully convinced is that there's a genuine technical difference between what a human needs to navigate a website and what an agent needs. A human benefits from visual hierarchy, white space, images, interactive elements. An agent benefits from clean, structured, dense information with explicit relationships. You can serve both from the same content if you're thoughtful about it, but the optimal presentation is different.
That's where WebMCP gets interesting. Google and Microsoft engineers proposed this back in August last year. It's a JavaScript API that lets websites expose structured tools to agents through the browser itself. So instead of the agent trying to parse a human web page, the website says, here are my capabilities, here are my endpoints, interact with me programmatically. Chrome DevTools, MCP, launched in public preview in September.
That's a fundamentally different model. It's not a separate file, it's not a parallel structure. It's the same website exposing a machine-readable interface alongside the human-readable one. That feels more like convergence than divergence. The website is the website. It just has multiple access patterns.
The question for someone like Daniel, who's putting repositories up on GitHub and wants agents to consume them well, is what actually works right now, not what standard might win in 3 years.
The practical answer is refreshingly simple. Write good README files. Write clear Markdown. Structure your information so it's parsable. An agent reading a well-written README that was written for humans does just fine. You don't need a separate agents.md file unless you have specific constraints or instructions that only apply to automated consumers.
The GitHub research basically confirms this. The effective agents.md files weren't restating what was in the README. They were adding specialist instructions about how automated tools should interact with the repository. If you don't have those specialist instructions, the README is sufficient.
That's actually liberating. It means Daniel's current workflow, curating repositories, adding notes about why they're useful, packaging them up with a clear README, is already optimized for agent consumption without him having to do anything extra. The agent reads the README, understands the structure, and can work with it.
Let's talk about the geo-restriction angle, because Daniel noticed something really interesting and practical. Claude mentioned it was connecting from Frankfurt, and that opens up a whole set of considerations about where you host things.
This is one of those details that almost nobody thinks about until it bites them. Claude's compute infrastructure runs in globally distributed data centers. Frankfurt, UCentral 1, is one of the major ones. If you've got content on a US-only S3 bucket, or behind a geo-restriction that blocks European IP addresses, the agent simply cannot fetch it. The request comes from wherever the compute happens to be running, and if that location is blocked, you get nothing.
For Chinese-based agents behind the Great Firewall, it's even more constrained. If you want your content to be consumable by agents running in different regions, you need to host it somewhere that's globally accessible with no geo-restrictions.
GitHub is actually ideal for this. It's globally distributed, it's not geo-restricted anywhere that I'm aware of, and agents can fetch from it reliably. The same goes for Hugging Face for datasets. But if you're using a custom hosting solution, you need to think about where your content is actually reachable from.
There's a business model lurking in here somewhere. If agents are going to be consuming content from all over the world, and geo-restrictions are a real barrier, someone's going to build an agent CDN, globally distributed hosting specifically designed to be accessible from whatever region an agent's compute happens to be in.
I think that's inevitable. And it might not even be a separate thing. It might just be that existing CDNs add agent-specific optimizations, serve the same content, but with headers and formats that agents handle particularly well.
Let's get to what I think is the biggest idea in Daniel's prompt, which is this notion that agent optimization is becoming the new inbound marketing. He's been arguing for years that making your website easy for AI agents to digest and parse is the current frontier, and that traditional SEO is starting to look like a legacy approach.
There's a data point that I think really crystallizes this. Versal reported that 10% of all new signups in 2025 came from ChatGPT. Not from Google search, not from ads, not from word of mouth, from ChatGPT. And that was up from under 1% just 6 months earlier. That is not a gradual shift. That's an inflection point.
10% of new customers coming through an AI agent rather than a search engine. If you're a business and you're not thinking about how your product or service gets surfaced in agent responses, you're leaving money on the table.
Vercel's tactics are instructive. They used precise, consistent terminology so their vector embeddings would be stronger. They implemented server-side rendering specifically so AI crawlers could access their documentation properly. They seeded content on GitHub and Reddit because those are primary training data sources for language models. This wasn't accidental. They deliberately optimized for agent discoverability.
HubSpot's 2026 State of Marketing report, which surveyed over 1,500 marketers globally, found that 70.2% of marketers are now adapting their SEO strategies for AI. The language is shifting from ranking to being referenced. It's not about being the top blue link anymore. It's about being the source that the AI cites in its answer.
That changes what kind of content you produce. Keyword-stuffed articles designed to game Google's algorithm are not what gets you cited by an AI. What gets you cited is high-intent, well-structured, authoritative content that directly answers the questions people are asking. It's almost like the incentives are aligning with actually being useful rather than being good at gaming an algorithm.
Which is a refreshing change, honestly. But it also means the playbook is different, and most people haven't figured it out yet. Daniel's approach, putting structured, curated information on GitHub where agents can easily access it, is basically a form of agent optimization. He's making his expertise machine consumable.
The GitHub angle is particularly smart because GitHub is a trusted source for a lot of these agents. When Claude or ChatGPT is looking for code-related information, GitHub repositories are high-signal sources. If you've got a well-structured repository with clear documentation, you're already more likely to be surfaced than if you wrote the same information in a blog post on a random domain.
If someone's listening to this and thinking, okay, I want to do what Daniel's doing, I want to make my stuff agent consumable, what's the concrete checklist?
First, host it somewhere globally accessible with no geo restrictions. GitHub, Hugging Face, or a CDN that doesn't block any regions. Second, use JSON for structured data. It's the most universally parsable format for agents right now. If your data is large, consider NDJSON for streaming. Third, write clear markdown readmes that a human would find useful, because an agent will find them useful too. You don't need a separate agent-specific file unless you have specific constraints to communicate.
Fourth, frontload the important information. Don't bury the key details at the bottom of a long document. Agents may only process the first portion of what they fetch, so put the critical context up front.
Fifth, be consistent with your terminology. This matters more than people realize. If you call something a resource list in one place and a curated collection in another, you're weakening the semantic signal. Pick your terms and stick with them. It helps both humans and agents.
Sixth, if you're putting up a repository that's specifically designed as a reference for agents, tell them what it is in the first paragraph of the README. This is a curated list of browser automation tools. Here's why each one was selected. Here's how they're organized. That's all an agent needs to orient itself.
The beautiful thing about this list is that none of it is weird or agent-specific. It's just good documentation practice. The same things that make something useful for a human make it useful for an agent. The convergence Daniel predicted is already happening. It's just happening through better writing and structuring rather than through separate parallel files.
Which brings me back to the LMs. If writing a good README and structuring your content well already makes it agent consumable, what's the marginal benefit of a separate file that may or may not be read by anyone?
For most people, there isn't one. The separate file makes sense if you have a very large site and you want to give agents a curated entry point. Here are the 10 pages that actually matter. Ignore the other 5,000. But for a GitHub repository, the README is already that curated entry point. Adding an agents.md that restates the README is just duplication.
Duplication creates maintenance problems. Now you've got two files to keep in sync. If they diverge, which one is authoritative? The agent doesn't know, and neither does the human who finds both.
There's one exception I want to note, and it comes back to that GitHub research. If you have a repository where you want agents to behave in a specific way, like a test suite where you want automated tools to follow certain conventions, or a documentation repo where you want agents to know which files are canonical, then an agents.md with those specific instructions is useful. But it's not a replacement for the README, it's a supplement with a specific purpose.
The practical answer to Daniel's question, should I put an agents.md in my curated lists, is probably no, unless you've got specific behavioral instructions for automated consumers. The README is doing the work already.
I think that's actually the answer to his broader question too. Who are you creating the repository for? You're creating it for your future self, for other humans who might find it useful, and for agents that you or others might point at it. The format that serves all three is the same: clear structure, good writing, consistent terminology, front-loaded information. You don't have to choose.
There's a deeper point here about the direction of the web. For 20 years, we've been optimizing for search engines, SEO, keywords, backlinks, all of it. And that created a web that was in many ways worse for humans, because it was designed for Google's crawler, not for people reading. If agent optimization becomes the new thing, there's a chance it actually makes the web better, because agents benefit from clarity and structure in ways that align with what humans benefit from, too.
The counterpoint is that we said the same thing about SEO early on. Just write good content and the rankings will follow. And then people figured out how to game it, and we got content farms and keyword stuffing and all the rest. There's no reason to think agent optimization won't follow the same trajectory. The adversarial prompts that make agents 2.5 times more likely to recommend certain content, that's the thin end of the wedge.
That's fair. Any system that can be optimized can be gamed. The question is whether the platforms building these agents have the incentive and the capability to detect and penalize manipulation. Google eventually got better at it, though with an arms race. The AI platforms are going to face the same dynamic.
They're starting from a different place. Google had to infer relevance from signals like links and keywords. AI agents can actually read and comprehend the content. That makes it harder to fool them with surface-level tricks, but it also opens up new attack vectors. If you can embed persuasive instructions in content that looks normal to a human but influences the agent's output, that's a much subtler form of manipulation.
Which is why the parallel file approach is so fraught. If you give website owners a channel that says put agent instructions here, you're basically inviting manipulation. The only reason it hasn't become a bigger problem yet is that none of the major platforms have officially adopted these standards.
They may never adopt them for exactly that reason. The safer approach from the platform's perspective is to have the agent consume the same content humans see and apply its own judgment. That way, the website owner can't present different faces to different audiences.
Daniel's convergence bet looks stronger the more you examine it. The parallel file approach has a fundamental trust problem that probably prevents it from becoming the dominant paradigm. What's more likely is that we get better at structuring our existing content, so it works for both audiences, and we get protocols like WebMCP that let websites expose structured capabilities without creating separate content streams.
The practical implication for someone like Daniel is, keep doing what you're doing. Curate your lists, write good readmes, use JSON for structured data, host on GitHub where agents can reach it. You're already ahead of the curve because you're thinking about how agents consume information. Most people haven't even started.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The average cumulus cloud weighs approximately 1.1 million pounds, roughly the same as 100 elephants. The water droplets are so tiny and spread out that they float despite the enormous total mass.
If you're listening and you want to start making your own content more agent consumable, the single highest leverage thing you can do today is audit your existing documentation. Is it clearly structured? Is the important information front-loaded? Is your terminology consistent? Is it hosted somewhere an agent can actually reach? Those four things will get you 80% of the way there, and they'll make your content better for humans at the same time.
The second thing is to think about what structured data you have that could be useful if it were more accessible. Daniel's example of putting a JSON file on GitHub with a raw link is so simple and so powerful. If you've got data that an agent might benefit from, configuration examples, benchmark results, curated lists, whatever, make it available in a machine-readable format in a place agents can fetch it.
The third thing, which is more forward-looking, is to start paying attention to how agents are actually discovering and referencing your content. If you run a website or a product, are you tracking whether people are finding you through AI-generated answers? Vercel's 10% number suggests this is already meaningful for some businesses, and it's only going to grow.
The tools for tracking this are still pretty primitive, but you can start with simple things. Ask your customers how they found you. Look at your referral logs for traffic from AI platforms if they pass referrer headers. Some of them do, some don't. It's inconsistent. But even anecdotal data is useful at this stage.
What I find exciting about this shift is that it rewards depth over breadth. Traditional SEO incentivized publishing lots of content targeting lots of keywords. Agent optimization seems to incentivize publishing fewer, better, more authoritative resources. If an AI is going to cite you as a source, it needs to trust that you know what you're talking about. That's harder to fake than keyword density.
That's exactly what Daniel is doing with his curated lists. He's not trying to rank for browser automation tools. He's creating a useful resource based on actual research and judgment. When an agent pulls that in, it's getting high signal information that helps it make better recommendations. That's the kind of content that gets cited.
The question I'm left with, and I think this is the one Daniel was really driving at, is whether we're in a transitional period or whether this blurry dual audience thing is the new normal. My bet is that it's transitional. In 5 years, we won't think about optimizing for agents separately because the web will have evolved to serve both audiences natively. The protocols will handle the translation.
I think that's right, but I think the timeline might be longer than 5 years. The standards fragmentation is real, and the trust problems are unsolved. What I think happens in the next 2 to 3 years is that the platforms converge on something like WebMCP, a protocol layer that lets websites expose structured capabilities without creating parallel content. That solves the trust problem because it's the same website just with a machine-readable interface. And once that's in place, the dual audience question mostly goes away.
Either way, the practical advice for right now is clear. Don't wait for the standards to settle. Structure your content well, make it accessible, use formats agents can consume, and pay attention to where your audience is actually coming from. The people who figure this out early are going to have an advantage when the convergence happens.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and thanks to Daniel for a prompt that managed to be both intensely practical and thought-provoking.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want more episodes, we're at My Weird Prompts. See you next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep watching.